You're listening to a DM podcast.
That's the nice thing, though. That's a nice thing about, I must say, about audio drama, is it's, compared to movies, it's so cheap, you don't have to listen to anyone. You don't have to take notes from anyone, you know? You don't have to convince anyone with lots of money that your idea is worthwhile.
All right, g'day and welcome back to another episode of Behind the Podcast with Jules and Stocks.
We're back.
This week we've spoken to Patrick McGinley of the Destination Earth podcast, who won the Best Fictional Podcast at the 2020 Australian Podcast Awards. So Patrick has done it all. He's written a book.
Amazon TV show.
TV shows.
In Spanish,
that's right. Dual linguist, probably more than dual, but yeah.
He's an interesting unit, right? I mean...
Definitely.
Raised in Germany on the audio dramas they had on radio there, or the radio plays. Learned his craft, I guess, storytelling here in Australia, in Sydney. Went to Afters, and that was where he conceived Destination Earth. And now, what, living in Ireland?
That's right. Yeah, so he's written the script quite a few years back, as you'll hear. So, you know, sitting there trying to figure out what to do with it. And then, as a lot of people have found, podcasts have introduced a way that they can sort of get something up off the ground relatively easily and inexpensively. So he's done that. He's given it a crack, and he's produced something that's just a whole lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. 16 years to get there.
That's right.
And he's a big fan on the power of audio storytelling over visual storytelling. Some interesting insights he's got there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's not waste any more time. Patrick, why don't you tell us about Destination Earth?
Destination Earth is Indiana Jones in space.
That's actually the most concise elevator pitch we've had so far. I think that is the true elevator pitch under 15 seconds.
Exactly. That was sort of where the idea came from, too.
Well, I think the old spin definitely does have some indie qualities to him, for sure. You can see that coming through.
Yeah. Definitely.
And how about yourself, Patrick? So you're a bit of a man of the world. I think we've been having a look at your bio and just judging by your accent that we're hearing for the first time.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about how you got started.
You look like Louis Theroux, but you have a much more interesting background, I think.
Well, so I was born in Belgium, where I didn't stay very long. Then we moved to Munich, to Germany, and that's where I grew up. And then I went to film school in the US, and then I went back to Germany to work as sort of video editor, producer, that kind of stuff. Lots of, you know, I did lots of like fashion stuff, music videos, sports, lots of motorsports and stuff. And
then
and squeezed a novel in there as well.
Oh yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I started writing on the side sort of around that time, and God, fortunately got like my first book published about 20 years ago, 15 years ago. And and that's sort of kids sort of middle grade fiction, YA fiction. Mm-hmm. So I've been writing books sort of on the side. It's not really, unless you're J.K. Rowling or someone, it's not really something that pays the rent. But it was good, you know, it's a good way to tell stories and sort of get better at it, I guess, you know, because you don't really need anything to write a book. You just need a computer or even a pencil, and you can start writing, and you know, you just kind of improve. And then in 2012... I went on a round the world tour, and my second stop was Sydney, and I liked it so much that I decided to move there.
Stuck around.
Yeah. Well, I actually finished the round the world tour and then went back to Sydney.
All right.
So in 2012, so in the summer 2012, I moved to Sydney. I went to film school again in Sydney, to Sydney Film School. And there I did a course in audio. So audio recording for film and TV and post-production. And that was really good, and that was sort of what made me think about audio.
Yeah, were podcasts on your radar at all at that stage?
Well, podcasts, yeah. Okay, well, audio dramas. Basically, anyone who grew up in Germany in the 80s was massively into audio dramas.
Oh, really?
On radio or?
Every kid had like a little tape recorder in their bedroom and like a stack of audio cassettes with dramas on them. And they were sort of like from really, really sort of little kid stuff to sort of more grown-up stuff. And the one that was my favorite was Flash Gordon. Ah. It was like an adaptation. It was like a tie-in to the movie, the 80s movie. Because it had the Queen title song.
It had the song, I was going to say.
That was the first time I heard a Queen song. I was like, wow, this is good. I think that's why you can't find it anymore, because they don't sell that particular drama anymore, because I don't think they got the music rights.
Gotcha. You know,
they couldn't clear the rights anymore. Those shaped my sort of love for audio drama. And they had that certain, that kind of format with a narrator and lots of action and lots of, like movies on tape, basically.
Was that a bigger thing than comic books in Germany, or?
Yeah, like, sort of superhero comics weren't really popular at all. The comic books in Germany that were popular were like Asterix and Lucky Luke and sort of the French, more the French ones. And there were some German ones too. Yeah, everyone had those audio dramas. The most popular series, and they're still ongoing with the same voice talent.
Oh, really?
So the most popular series
is called The Three Investigators, or Die Drei Fragezeichen, The Three Question Marks. And that's so big that they actually do studio stadium tours. So they go and do the dramas live in front of audiences, and they're all like my age, you know, they're all like in their 40s.
Wow.
Yep, there's the big nostalgia element to it.
Yeah, huge. So yeah, that was a big thing that sort of shaped my love for audio drama. So that's where that came from, basically.
Fascinating.
Actually, I have a group of friends who did a thing called Full Playback Theater, and what they do is they put on the tape and then they act it out on stage. And they started as this like indie troupe with like costumes and props and stuff, and they make it all funny, you know. Because everyone knows those stories, because we've listened to them so many times, so you know people love it. And
that's hilarious. So they've tried to put a visual to the world, but you've tried to just keep the world of audio going and try your own things.
Well, I mean, the way Destination Earth happened was when I was pretty fresh out of film school, I just had this idea, which was inspired by two sources. One was obviously Indiana Jones and sort of Raiders, that kind of thing. And the other thing is Isaac Asimov's Foundation series.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know Asimov, but it's like
about
this
robotics.
Whole cycle from the robot stories to the Empire stories, and you know it spans millions and millions of years. And at the end, in the last two books, there's like two scientists who go to look for planet Earth because everyone's forgotten about it. And I thought that's a really cool premise, but Asimov can be very, very dry. Asimov's very basically smart people sitting in rooms talking about stuff. I love it, but it's not every person's cup of tea. But and I thought there's an opportunity here to turn this story into a more action adventure-y thing, you know. And I immediately had the idea of like Indiana Jones kind of looking for a thing, and like a treasure hunt kind of thing.
Mm.
And then in space, I thought that's cool. That really sort of lit up something in my head. So those were the two big inspirations. And then I sat down and I thought, well, who's my main character? Who's the most interesting person that this could happen to? And so since the story is about where do we come from? Where does the human race come from? I thought, what about if it's someone who doesn't have any roots, who doesn't come from anywhere, who doesn't even know why it's important that we know where we come from? So that's how I came up with the idea of someone drifting in space, of being found as a kid drifting in space, and then he becomes a drifter. He's
a little drifter.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, he has no roots anywhere. And then he meets someone, the professor, who has dedicated his entire life to one thing and is really driven. And that's sort of the interesting conflict there, I think, or the interesting character clash. And then he, like Spin, learns throughout the adventure why it's important where he comes from. And then, yeah, that's sort of the idea I had.
So when you were first coming up with the conceit of the show, did you consider it that it would be a podcast, or were you thinking about, you know, maybe just releasing this back in Germany in the full audio?
No. Actually, I wrote it as a screenplay. A movie screenplay. Because, you know, I studied film. I wanted to make films all my life. And I knew while I was writing it, no one would ever consider buying this or making this. Because it's really, really hard to get anything done in science fiction or fantasy that's not based on anything.
Yeah, that doesn't have the IP behind it.
Exactly. There's always has to be an IP. Like, you know, they're making another Lord of the Rings show. They're making another Game of Thrones show. Mm. But if you came up with a cool fantasy script, I don't think you'd get anywhere selling it because people are like, what's this? No one knows this. It's hugely expensive to produce this kind of stuff. And we don't have a built-in audience. You know, so I knew that it was doomed to failure. But I wrote it partly as an exercise, right. You know, or as a writing sample, or so you know, I put it in the drawer like so many other projects. I, if you ask any writer, they have like drawers full of stuff that goes nowhere. But I kept taking it out over the years. You know, this was 2006 when I first wrote the script, and I kept taking it out and I didn't know. And then in 2014, when I was finished with Sydney Film School and I'd done that whole audio thing, I took it out again and I thought, I really like this. I want to do something with it. And then I thought, maybe I can do something with audio.
Yeah, the worlds and universes were colliding.
Exactly. And I remembered those old Flash Gordon audio tapes and I thought, there's something here. I should at least try to do it.
And what was the adaption process like? Because you have to do a lot of exposition and development when it becomes an audio play. You've got to explain what's happening.
Oh, so I opened the script and I kind of went through it. And I thought, what do we need to know that we don't get from audio? So I and since all those old audio dramas I'd listened to had these great narrators, it's sort of like your grandpa reading your story. That's the kind of vibe. I thought, okay, I'm going to do a narrator because this is too complicated to set up with only, I don't know, dialogue. And the problem with audio drama is always you have expositional dialogue where it's like, look over there, it's a giant spaceship. Oh, yes, it is very giant. And you know, look at that alien, it's attacking me with its five tentacles and stuff, you know. Yeah. And you have to kind of find a ways. I mean, that's part of the charm, but you don't want to do too much of that. So you have to kind of find a ways around it. So I thought, where do I absolutely need narration? You know, at the beginning of a scene to set up the location, all that kind of stuff. But then you find out that sometimes you don't. And I think audio is more powerful than you would think, you know? Mm. So one thing I did in preparation, or that I've been doing for, you know, since I got interested with movies, is I listen to a lot of movies. So I just record the audio. Ah. For example, I just record the audio of Star Wars and just listen to that.
And there are certain tropes as well, aren't there? There's sort of, this is the sound of an airlock, this is the sound of a blaster, this is the sound of whatever it may be.
The good thing is that we've all consumed so much stuff, you know, in the last 20 years, in the last 30 years. We've seen all these scenes. You know, if you want to do a big battle scene between orcs and elves or something, we've seen those images, you know. We can construct it in our head just from the audio. And I think one thing, The biggest secret of filmmaking is that the sound is more important than the picture.
Yeah, right.
You can do a little test if you want at home. So put on Star Wars and turn off the sound and see how long you can watch it without getting bored and checking your phone or checking Twitter. And I'll tell you, like, after 2-3 minutes, you'll just be bored out of your mind because it's dead, you know? There's no sound. You don't believe it. It's just pictures. But if you do the opposite and just put it on your headphones and listen to it, it's all there.
Even derivatively, you get that with reality TV, just the way they set up.
Yeah.
What's going on? Oh, I got to hate this person because of the music.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Exactly. There's so much in sound that you pick up unconsciously, you know.
So tell us about developing the actual episodes and everything. I mean, you decided to go with 10 episodes and about 10 minutes each?
Yeah, sort of. I kind of went through the script and thought, where's the best cliffhanger here? Like, where's the scene where, you know, like the first episode ends when they're about to go to the museum. It's like, aha, people will want to know what this is about, you know. And then so every episode ends on a cliffhanger. And they just came at about like every 10, 12 pages. It's funny because some episodes are much longer than others, but they're sort of on the page. They are sort of the same page numbers.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, so that's kind of where I put the episode breaks, so to speak. One thing I found out with the story that really helped as an audio drama, I found out that while I was adapting it, that there are several things in this screenplay that really worked in audio. And one is that there's four main characters that all sound completely different. Mm. So you have like, you know, an older man, 30-year-old man, 30-year-old woman, and a teenage girl. So that you're never confused who's speaking.
Yeah, know? Very important.
And you don't have to memorize like 20 names. It's only those four people basically on a journey. That was one aspect that was really good. Another one was a lot of times they are in different locations and they're talking on the radio to each other. So that gives you the opportunity to describe stuff. So, you know, Spin will be checking out the colony ship and he'll say, "Oh my God, look at this." And then, "I wish you could see this." He actually says, "I wish you could see this." And then he goes on to describe everything. So that really worked well. And then there's lots of opportunity to do cool sound design stuff. You know, there's like alien planets, spaceships, space stations, futuristic city, you know. So, yeah. It really worked out well that way.
Yes, I mean, how did you start adding the layers to each of these thing from, you know, the original script that you had, breaking it down and finding those hooks and everything, to then saying, all right, I'm going to need, you know, four bits of vocal talent, I'm going to need someone to do the sound design, I'm going to need all these bits and pieces.
Well, when did it become this is now a podcast and I've got it. What was the tipping point?
Process was really kind of long for various reasons, but in 2014 I had a sort of office job and I thought, I want to do something with this thing, why don't I just put out an ad on Star Now to see if I can get any voice actors in the studio. And I knew I did it all at Sydney Sound Brewery, which is a studio that used to be in Redfern, and that's where I had my classes with John Resk, who's the he owns the studio, and you know, we became really good friends. And I thought, yeah, you know, I'll just rent the studio for a couple of hours, get some actors in and see, you know, if I can find any. And I found some really good people. And then my thought was I'll do a trailer first and then do crowdfunding to see if I can, you know, get the money together. And so I found my actors. I did a trailer with them. And then I kind of got bogged down with the whole crowdfunding thing because I thought, oh, no, I have to do sort of awards and rewards and... Mm-hmm. And then send them out, and that whole thing became so overwhelming. And you know, it took me a year to get sort of through this. I thought, I'll just do it myself.
Yeah, it's a bit of an art form unto itself, isn't it? The crowdfunding sort of, you know, rewards and prizes and everything.
Yeah, it's simplified now. It's just like, look, if you think this is cool, give me money.
Yeah,
yeah. That was much more daunting than doing the actual thing, you know. So I thought I'd just do it myself, you know. And it since I stretched out the recording and the production over so many years, it, you know, wasn't that much money even. Like, you know, I had a job, a, you know, full-time job on the side, so it was, you know, it was more like a hobby on the side.
The job was the hobby on the side to the to the real passion.
The job was the real passion was obviously in this. but it wasn't that expensive to make this thing. So then I had my cast together. I have a friend of mine is a composer. We met, you know, 30 years ago in Germany, but she became a composer and lives in LA now. And I asked her if she would do the trailer music, and she came up with this great theme. And then I put the trailer together and I thought, you know what, let's just do the whole thing.
Silke?
Yeah, that's Silke. Yeah.
And all the talent was from Star Now.
There were some people, Francis the narrator, I knew from short films from Sydney Film School, and also Jerry Spin, I knew.
It's interesting. Star Now, it's almost like what Fiverr's become now.
Yeah. and one was a personal recommendation. Peter, the scientist, was a recommendation from someone else. Yeah. So I did that. And then basically what we did, because I had no experience with how long it would take to record this, you know. It was 130 pages. I was like, I don't know. How many days will that take in the studio? Maybe 10? I don't know. So we booked a day in the studio to try it out, and we got through half the script, and I realized, oh, this is going to be much easier than I thought. So we did 2 days in the studio for the main cast, another day in the studio for the narration, and then there was like supporting characters here and there, and I, you know, booked an hour here and there to record their stuff.
So were the main characters, were they in around the same time and reacting with each other? Yeah.
That was one thing I really wanted to do, is have all four of them in the studio at the same time. So, and I think you can really hear that too in the performances. You know, they play off of each other quite a lot, and yeah, that was very important to me. That's also one thing I would recommend if you do a sort of action-based audio drama, that you do that, because it really helps the performance.
Mm, so it's really leaning into the audio play route.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I think the only drawback is that you basically have to have everyone in the same town, so you can't get talent from all over the world. You have to get them from the same place.
Yeah, well, we did appreciate that they all had, you know, this far in the future, had some good Australian accents shining through a little bit.
So, you know, they asked me and I was like, do whatever. I mean, it's so many years in the future, they probably don't speak English anymore. So,
yeah, yeah, true.
And why does everyone have to speak American, you know?
It's absolutely.
The good guys always speak American and the bad guys always speak British with British accents. And the orcs are always London Cockney for some reason.
Yes.
I was just going to say, I like for some of the sound design as well, just even a bit of chalk on the chalkboard seems to have made it into the show.
Yeah.
Some of these analog technologies should never die.
I bought a chalkboard for that. And my reasoning was, why do they have a futuristic thing if that just works, you know?
Yeah, well, he's an earth purist.
Yeah.
130 pages. I mean, that it felt lighter than that. I mean, that's a feature film script, right? That's
yeah, it is. It was.
Okay, so everyone's recorded. How long was the editing process? What happened? And how hands-on were you in that?
I did everything, basically. I did, except for the recording and the final mix, which John did in the studio. I just did the whole thing. So we recorded the main dialogue in the studio, and then I went home and basically cleaned it up and looked for the best takes and, you know, performance-wise whatsoever. And then I had sort of the clean thing without any effects on it. And then so I started sort of thinking about effects. The next step was basically layering effects and doing stuff like reverb. I used a lot of sort of, like, every location has its own specific reverb. So because, you know, they're in the museum, it's a big sort of room, you need a sort of cathedral-like sound. Then a spaceship, you need a different kind of sound. So I did that. And then I worked with my composer to do the music. And the process there was I did temp tracks first. Well, she had written the main title theme for the trailer. So what you hear at the beginning, that was from the trailer, basically. And then we went... Basically, we did it like a film post-production, the sound post-production on a film. You go in, you do the effects work, you lock picture. I mean, for me, locking picture meant locking the dialogue and the episodes. And I did all the effects work, and I put in the temp tracks, which is music from other sources like movies or video games or whatever, and that fit the mood and what I kind of wanted from my composer. And I sent it off to her, and then she sent me back, you know, first drafts and... And then I commented and, you know, and at the end we were both happy and she sent me the final versions. And then once that was done, that was the final step. We went to the studio to do the final mix with John, and then that's it. But that,
wow.
I mean, that took like 5 years that I just described there.
So I'm in
part of the problem was this whole crowdfunding thing. It took a year, and then my composer got pregnant, so she had to slow down on the composing, but the music took another year, but you know, it took a long time.
Are there any other effects apart from a blackboard that you're particularly proud of or that have a nice little story behind them?
I mean, one fun thing was the alien voices. So basically what I did with the aliens was I wrote dialogue in alien language. I didn't come up with a language or anything, but it's not like Klingon or something. But I wrote sort of like alien voice dialogue, and then I recorded that. And I read an interview with a sound designer for District 9, the South African science fiction, a great movie. And he had this great sort of alien voice sound for the aliens. And I read an interview with him where he said that what he did was he tried rubbing vegetables together. And that sort of makes this kind of squeaky sort of vocal sounds. So I went down to...
What were your vegetable of choice?
And I started rubbing vegetables together to find what sounded best. And it turned out bok choy sounded the best. So I bought some bok choy back to the studio. And I started just recording bok choy. And... So then I went into my alien dialogue, and then you just replace some of the vowels or some of the consonants with, you know, some bok choy, and then throw some filters on it and stuff, and that's what you get That's how you get the alien voices.
Oh, that's amazing. I love those when you see the sort of behind the scenes, the Foley artists on movies doing the various stuff. It's incredible what they come up with to make these sounds.
Yeah. That's really fun. I did some of that. The chalkboard was, I bought a chalkboard because I couldn't find chalk sounds. So I was like, and the other thing I couldn't find was air tanks. You know, those sort of like for scuba diving, those air tanks dragging over concrete. So I took a SodaStream bottle and dragged it over the concrete in the studio and then pitched it down so it sounded bigger. So
love the craft.
So after all of that time, I imagine you didn't want to sort of release this too quickly. So you haven't put it out as like a kind of one hit binge. You did release it week by week. Is that right?
Yeah, I thought, you know, people will discover it and then you can put something out every other week. You can say, you know, new episode, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I think there's a big discussion now with streaming services whether the binge model works better or the episode weekly episode model works better. And if you look at sort of what people talk about online, it's usually the weekly ones where like, oh my God, I can't believe this cliffhanger and let's see what happens next time and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It gives everyone a sort of a bit of a time to come together and talk about it, you know, each week and over a specific thing. Whereas if everyone's listening to everything all at once, all over the place, and it's all disparate,
there's no water cooler conversation.
No, that's right. It's so hard to lock in.
But you did do what there seems to be coming a bit of a trend with some people. It's to do the double episode drop at the start.
Yeah, I thought those two episodes are quite good because they give you everything you need to know of what the story is going to be. And if by the end of the second one you're hooked, then you're going to listen to the rest. And if not, it's not for you. But I thought maybe one episode was a little bit too short to get people hooked. I think also what helps is the short episodes. So, yes. You know, 10 minutes, you can always, like, if there's a podcast and it's like, oh, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, like, ugh.
It's incredibly snackable.
yeah.
How did you feel when you pushed it out into the universe? Were you, my God, 5-year journey's over, or I'm so excited, or what was the emotion?
It was very exciting because, I mean, I wrote the original script in 2006, so, you know, this was like, when was it released? 14 years later? Yeah, it's like, this is, and I felt pretty good about it, you know? I thought people like it, and since I'd worked on it for so long, I never got bored with it, you know? Like, listening to sort of half-finished episodes and stuff, I never got bored and thought, ugh, this drags. I'm going to fast forward through this bit. Usually, I kind of listen to the whole thing, and I thought, yeah, I feel very excited about this, you know. And then COVID hit at the same time.
Yeah. I was going to say. So you went live March 9, and if you say that day one of COVID was really March 12th. That was NBA get cancelled, Tom Hanks gets COVID, and Trump gives this bizarre press conference about the injecting the cleaner in you.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that. I was like, oh, that was sort of day zero of
COVID.
What
a crazy year.
So did that play for you? That work for you, do you think?
Well, I don't know like if it had an impact on the listening numbers because I had no frame of reference, you know. I just put it out there and you know, watch the numbers go up, but I didn't know, is this slow? Is this fast? Are people liking it? Who knows, you know? I still don't know how good it is. I mean, I got your fantastic award, which is really nice. So someone must have liked it.
So what was it like for promotion? Did you have a bit of a strategy in place or did you sort of just think I'll put it out and see how it goes?
I didn't have any sort of paid advertising or something. I just did sort of Twitter, Instagram posts of here it is, new episode. And then I had a snippet of every episode. I had a snippet the day before. It's like tomorrow, next episode, and the little sort of, oh my God, I can't believe it. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, great.
And then on the day the episode dropped, I had a different snippet. So that's basically what I did for advertising. I didn't really do any sort of marketing or anything.
And what was the audience response like? I mean, have you been bombarded by, you know, science fiction fans and things just wanting to know when the next adventure's coming?
I don't know. It's sort of, there's some nice reviews on Apple.
Very
there's
good
not
reviews.
Really
yes.
That much of like, you know, on Twitter, every once in a while someone asks me something, but it's not really that huge, you know. I don't know. Maybe people are just, you know, binging it and then going on to the next thing. I didn't have the sort of, I mean, the biggest thing I got was the award. And after that, it was funny, sort of, not straight after that, but sort of a month after, or a month and a half after, the numbers really went up. Like in January, the numbers really went up to like four times what they usually are. And then I think in February there was a cyber attack on the podcast provider, and it was offline for like 2 days, and then the numbers plummeted, and now they're back to where they were. Because I think in that phase we actually hit number one in Australian and New Zealand fiction podcasts on Apple. Yeah,
terrific.
That was great. But then sort of I think we dropped out of the top 10, then people wouldn't find us anymore, you know. I don't know how it works.
And since then you've got an Amazon show, is that right?
Oh yeah. This happened parallel basically.
I'm scared to pronounce it.
El juego de las llaves. It's the game of keys, basically. It's a completely different show. I had nothing to do with the idea. It was something the producer sent me the pilot and said, can you help me on this? And then I rewrote it and then it got picked up. But I would never in a million years have come up with this idea, but, you know, it kind of worked out. It's about a group of people who meet, you know, they went to school together back in the day and they meet again and they're all in relationships and stuff. And then they decide to play the game of keys where you put your keys in a bowl and you pick one out and you sleep with the person whose car keys you've picked.
Yep. Classic reunion stuff.
Hilarity ensues.
Very universal.
Yeah. And that got picked up and it was quite successful. So they're now doing two more seasons of it. And yeah, that was fantastic. That was quite good.
So is this now supporting your passion for podcasting as well as the old full-time job?
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, like the money in film and TV is much better than in novels and podcasting.
Yeah.
So that's been good. We just had a kid 4 years ago and it's been good for me staying at home and spending lots of time with him. So, yeah.
Season 2 of Destination Earth, what, 2034 based on existing timelines?
I mean, I would have some ideas for it, but I think since I'm not in Sydney anymore and getting the gang together would be difficult, I'm not sure if it'll happen. I think maybe I'll do something in a different genre, you know?
Mm.
I don't think everything needs multiple sequels. And
so you're not of the Marvel Disney, bleed it till it's dry.
Isn't it nice to have something that's just one thing, you know, you can just listen to the...
You do have the feed though, so I guess it's something
that's
you could revisit in a few years and reactivate the feed with something else.
Yeah.
When Stocks and I were caught up and were talking about the show, I think we both immediately mentioned this one particular... And I don't want to give away too many spoilers.
Yeah.
But, you know, one little aspect of the show which did explain the disappearance of a certain, you know, inhabitant of Earth at some stage, which...
Lovely Easter egg.
Absolutely.
I thought about cutting that because it's like, is this too complicated? It's in the middle of a giant space battle and there's a lot of text for basically a gag, but I love it so much, you know?
I was gardening when I heard that and I dropped...
Yeah.
My whippersnipper and went, what? Went back and went, that's brilliant. That was
I'm glad
good.
That landed because I was sort of like, do people get it? What I'm talking about, Mexico? And I don't know. Well, I'll just leave it in. That's the nice thing, though. That's a nice thing about, I must say, about audio drama is it's compared to movies, it's so cheap. You don't have to listen to anyone. You don't have to take notes from anyone, you know? You don't have to convince anyone with lots of money that your idea is worthwhile, you know? So I never got notes from anyone saying, well, I don't know about this scene and this scene. So I could just do whatever I wanted. Yeah. And that scene in particular was like, that would have been cut, I think, you know, if someone else, they were like, oh, what, we have special effects of these inhabitants of Earth and it's going to be really expensive or, no, we have to cut that, you know? But with audio, it doesn't cost that much. It's just a few sound effects.
It's a real common refrain we get on this podcast where a lot of people we deal with are coming from TV, film, other mediums of storytelling that will pay their bills for them traditionally. And they just say, look, working in podcasts, I get no notes.
Yeah, exactly.
Or I'm not compromising constantly. And
yeah,
my
exactly.
original vision
love
is so
it.
Bastardized by the time it gets there and not for creative reasons.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, you know. I mean, the really expensive thing about films is the picture. the sound is cheap, you know. With indie movies, that's the thing that usually goes wrong is they don't pay enough attention about on the sound. I don't know, sometimes you see a movie, sort of like an indie production, you see the trailer somewhere and you think, something's off here. It looks fine. the acting's okay, but something's off. And usually it means the sound wasn't good. The actors sound like off mic and the mix isn't good. And it's really, it's like something you really to focus on when you make a movie is the sound, I think.
That's a good little tip, hey, just turn off the screen. And
I'm going to go and listen. Yeah, I'll be paying attention to that, yeah.
It works really well. I mean, not just for action, you know. Like, let's say you're doing a romantic comedy, you know, listen to When Harry Met Sally with the picture off. The, you know, the scene in the diner, the famous scene.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's one definite really scene there which sound, people could remember.
That completely works, you know, the uncomfortable silence, then she starts doing her thing, and then the lady's saying, I'll have what she's, you know, there's no picture needed here.
Correct. Very true.
So you found a lot of inspiration in films and everything. Are there other podcasts that you've listened to which you've really liked the sound of, or any that you would want to recommend to other listeners?
I mean, I definitely want to shout out to the fellow nominees, because they were all great. Generation Batuta, Nocturnal Transmissions, Love and Luck, and Six Cold Feet. They just show how much talent there's in Australia, you know, and they're all so different. And I think also it's sort of stuff you wouldn't see on Netflix or something, because it's not something that would be greenlit by someone. But since it's podcasting or audio drama, it's relatively cheap and you can just experiment more, you know. The main two podcasts I listen to, because I'm a bit of a film guy. One is Script Notes. They talk about screenwriting and sort of screenwriting stuff, but there's a lot of craft stuff too. So it's a real recommendation for anyone who writes anything, really. It helps me, you know, with writing novels too. It's not just sort of screenwriting focused.
What's the format of that show? Are they interviewing or are they just chatting amongst themselves?
They're basically chatting amongst themselves. Sometimes they have guests on, like really sort of interesting guests, sort of, you know, screenwriters. I think if people want to dive in, there's now almost 500 episodes, so maybe hard to get your bearings, but if a good episode to start is episode 73, where they talk about Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they kind of go scene by scene and from a screenwriting point of view see what's going on, you know. And then there's one that is really good, it's episode 403, it's called How to Write a Movie, and it's basically how storytelling works and why what kind of stories work, and it's really sort of focused things in my mind about writing, and it's about basically about character. So usually it's about one character wanting something or having a certain worldview, and then the story challenges that worldview, and that was really sort of interesting. So, you know, those two episodes I can definitely recommend. As far as Australian podcasts go, that my number one favorite is Art of the Score. It's so good. It's these three sort of music nerds talking about film scores, and they take apart almost every note of the film scores and talk about it. And that helped me a lot when talking to my composer, sort of, you know, talking about themes and all that kind of stuff. And that's really, really a great podcast.
Yeah, I've listened to a couple of those on long car trips as well. It's really good. I mean, there's some like Jurassic Park, which are just fantastic, where they just break down each of the different themes and songs that are along.
Yeah,
with that.
Yeah. Or the Star Wars one, you know, like they have a 3-episode, 5-hour show just about the first Star Wars movie, so they really go into insane detail, but it's really good.
Just to go back to Raiders of the Ark for a second, have you seen the Steven Soderbergh cut of that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so he's recut. I'll send it to you. He's recut Raiders of the Lost Ark. No, he's not. Hasn't recut it. He's rescored it and he's made it black and white.
Okay. Yeah.
So that really ties into what you're saying about the audio being the thing. It's incredible. So it's no dialogue and he's just scored it. It's phenomenal.
Cool. Yeah.
I'll get that
to check that out. I mean, if you look at something like Star Wars, I don't think we would be talking about Star Wars now if it didn't have that brilliant sound design and the brilliant music, you know?
Yeah, well, it just elevates the whole art form, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think before then, sound design wasn't that big of a deal, but Ben Burtt, the guy who did it, did such an amazing job, you know? Like, you just, like, everything sounds so good, you know? It could have been really bad. Actually, I thought about doing a sort of exercise where I do bad sound effects, put bad sound effects and bad music on it, but I never, you know, got around to doing that. But I think that would be funny to do that. But
Well, I think you've expressed definitely a passion for sound and all things audio. Do you have any final advice for other people who want to get into, you know, the scripted side of podcasting and fictional stories?
I mean, if you're doing an audio drama, I think my advice would be get your actors in the same room, if possible. I mean, now with COVID, who knows, you know, but I think that really helps performances. If, you know, they're acting, so, you know, they have to play off of each other. It's not just recording lines. I would say get as good a composer as you can, because the music is so important. There are composers out there who are looking for interesting projects. You don't have to get your mate with the keyboard to do some stuff. You can actually get like a professional composer for not that much money, I think. Yeah, listen to movies. If you want to do a radio drama in a certain genre, listen to movies of that genre that inspired you. You know, if it's romantic comedy, listen to When Harry Met Sally, listen to Fleabag, you know. See what how much of it is in the sound, and I think that helps a lot.
I think that's how I'm going to put myself to bed every night now. Just the scores.
Yeah, yeah.
Carmat be damned.
Well, thanks very much, Patrick. I mean, that's some great advice in there, and it's been a pleasure talking to you, and congratulations on the success.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for getting in touch.
Oh, we appreciate it, man. Look, and thank you for taking the time. And look, it's a masterpiece you've done, really.
Oh, thank you. All right. My love to Australia. We miss it. It's May here and it's like 14 degrees.
Well, it hasn't been the same since you left, Patrick.
Yeah, I know.